This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. Malaysia has been under MCO 3.0 since the 1st of June, and yet cases have skyrocketed despite the restrictions on movement and national appeals to stay home. Why are our policy measures ineffective to stop the spread? And are we actually making our decisions based on data? For a better understanding on the kinds of data available and how it's being used, I'm speaking today to Bu Su Lin, editor-in-chief of the medical news portal Code Blue. Good morning, Su Lin. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Morning to you too, Shazana.
So Code Blue is one of the media outlets at the forefront in data crunching the numbers issued by government authorities on COVID-19 indicators in order to present them to the public in ways that we can actually understand. Can we start with a walkthrough of the different types of data that is actually available to the public and the media to sift through?
Sure, Shazana. So on the part of the COVID epidemic, every day, the Ministry of Health releases data on COVID-19 cases across the country, as well as in the different states, COVID deaths on the national basis, and also according to states, they also release data on clusters, the number of clusters, cases, where the clusters are found, and that's all contained on the Ministry of Health's website, and also the daily COVID reports are produced by the Health Director General Tan Sri Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah. So you can find those reports on kpkesehatan.com. So that is generally the kind of data that MOH produces on a regular basis. Besides that, besides the daily COVID report, MOH also does have graphics on the clusters, and some testing data also released on their CPRC's Telegram channel. Yeah, so that's the epidemic. So on the vaccination side, the COVID-19 immunization task force has just started releasing raw data files on vaccine registration and also COVID-19 vaccinations, as in the number of first and second doses given across the country and by state. So CITF's raw data files can be found on GitHub, which is quite useful. Yeah.
Okay. And the files by the CITF, that's just raw data that's open to anybody to kind of take in and analyze however they want, yeah? The data from the Ministry of Health is like this daily number vomit, essentially.
Yeah, you could say that, yes.
Okay. Let's look at the Ministry of Health data because they collect a lot. Do we know where all this data comes from? Is it from individual hospitals? Are they collected through state government machinery? Do we have an idea of that chain of data collection and how it's pooled in one repository?
Sure. So the data that is produced to the public every day comes from the CPRC. So the different facilities would feed in reports to the national CPRC, and then the CPRC collates the data. They have a cutoff point, 12 p.m., and then that is the data that is produced for the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think many of us, myself included, I mean, we keep our eye on the daily new infections and the number of deaths and the daily vaccination numbers. I think those are the three key indicators that that we follow and that are easy to understand. Are these indicators enough to give us an accurate picture of the COVID-19 situation?
Well, it depends. It depends what exactly you want to do with the data. Initially, when the epidemic first started, of course, the focus was on daily infections, right? But now that the epidemic has really gone far and wide, and we have seen over 9,000 cases reported on the 9th of July. So the focus right now, if it's about trying to craft an exit strategy, we should be looking at hospitalization and ICU rates rather than daily infection rates, because the concern here now is on how we can use vaccines to break the link between infection and hospitalization and death, meaning it is okay to test a lot to get a high number of infections, because when you test more, you're basically diagnosing cases early so that you catch them And then you're able to provide care for them before, rather than them coming late into the healthcare system when they're at stage 4 and 5 and they have a much higher chance of dying. So if we keep focusing on daily case numbers, and if the case numbers are really high, that will not just put the public in a panic, but you know the government itself would be panicked. And again, it's not helpful anymore to just focus on infection numbers, not when they are this high. So really the focus should be on hospitalization and ICU rates, which unfortunately the Ministry of Health does not release on a daily basis. I mean, occasionally the Ministry of Health or the Health Director General will put up ICU occupancy rates by certain states, but that's only occasionally. So it's not released every day.
I see.
But that is what we need to look at. I mean, if we want to be able to manage COVID, we shouldn't be trying for a zero COVID strategy, because we're still essentially using the same strategy now that we tried to use last year. And it can't work anymore because we're never going to get there. So if we want to learn to live with COVID, then the focus really should be on making sure that the cases that we get are manageable and do not overwhelm the healthcare system. So not overwhelming the healthcare system means you don't want to have too many sick cases. And Singapore themselves also recently, so the Singapore government now is releasing a roadmap on living with COVID-19 as an endemic disease. So what this means is that they accept that COVID will be here, and they're not even going to count daily COVID cases anymore. They're just going to track the number of COVID cases in hospital and ICU, mm-hmm. because that is what counts.
Mm-hmm. I think that is a very pertinent point. The fact that if we're looking at trying to protect our healthcare system, then the more pertinent indicator really is the level of our hospitalizations in ICU. So we know that, as you said, this information doesn't come out as often as we would like it to. What other gaps in the data do you see? And I suppose I can see this in two ways. One is the data that the government has but is not disclosing, or maybe not disclosing regularly, like the hospitalization and ICU rates. Is there also data that the government isn't keeping track of or isn't collecting information on that that maybe we should be paying attention to?
Well, testing is also another pertinent indicator to look at, because if you release testing data, then you can tell the public that the reason why we're having this high number of cases is because we tested a lot more today compared to yesterday. But even that we don't have. So the data that is available publicly on testing, so MOH only gives the cumulative number of tests done as of today for each day. And that is released by CPRC in their graphic. But that's not helpful because it's cumulative, right? So if we want to calculate how many tests were done each day, then we have to manually calculate that number ourselves, right? And then we have to come up with the positive rates ourselves by looking at the number of positive cases today divided by the number of tests done times 100, and then you get a positive rate. All this data should be released by the Ministry of Health without needing people to calculate it by themselves. And then you can tell, because the WHO has set a maximum 5% positive rate benchmark as an indicator of sufficient testing before countries reopen. And our positive rates have been really high for the past few weeks. So I think recently in the past few days, it exceeded even 9%.
Maybe you don't have an answer to this, but I'm just wondering, why isn't the government sharing this data then? I'm sure media and other parties have been asking for them, obviously. We've heard time and time again about appeals from state governments for Putrajaya to be more forthcoming with the data. Okay, this is a two-part question. Number one, why aren't federal and state authorities sharing data? That's one. And number two, why is the government not sharing that data with the public if it would be more helpful for it to be open knowledge?
Okay, on state governments, the data that they receive is from the state health department, which is under the Federal Ministry of Health. So health is not decentralized in Malaysia. Health is still under federal jurisdiction. So the Ministry of Health is a federal ministry, and the state health departments in each state report to MOH in Putrajaya. So state governments only get what they can from the federal government. So why MOH doesn't release testing data, for example, I'm not sure exactly why. I think maybe, if they release testing data and daily positive rates, not just on a national basis, but also by state, perhaps they don't want to be criticized of under-testing if the positive rate exceeds 5%, for example, in certain states. So And so this is the one to avoid a perception.
And this is really just conjecture at this point, because the MOH hasn't really given any explanation on this or officially responded to requests for this kind of data, have they?
Well, so CodeBlue has requested for state testing data over the past 4 weeks. 4 weeks ago, the Ministry of Health did give the media testing data by state for each. I think there were a couple of weeks. So we call it epidemiological weeks, which starts from Sunday to Saturday. So the Ministry of Health did give testing data by state for a couple of weeks. But then the past 2 weeks, for weeks 25 and 26, MOH did not give the data, even though CodeBlue requested for it.
So I see. So all this data is dependent on us requesting for it, rather than, as you said, being available.
Yeah, I mean, the media has to ask for it. The health minister and the Mufti minister, they have a joint press conference every Monday. So that's usually when the media will ask for certain, they will make certain data requests besides other questions. So that's when we ask.
I'm speaking to Busu Lin, editor-in-chief of medical news portal CodeBlue. When we come back, we'll discuss the state of our healthcare system and the tremendous pressure facing frontliners. Stay with us. BFM 89.9. Hello, this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. I'm Shazana, and on the show with me today is Busu Lin, editor-in-chief of medical news portal CodeBlue. Earlier in the show, we were discussing the types of COVID-19 data that are accessible to the public and what some of the gaps are. Let's go to how the Ministry of Health communicate with the media and the public. So very early on in the pandemic, the Ministry of Health, and particularly the DG, received a lot of appreciation for their daily press briefings on the COVID-19 situation. And the perception then was that the government was being very transparent about the domestic situation, which in turn reassured the public that, you know, we had the necessary systems in place to carry us through the pandemic. Does this perception still hold, do you think?
Well, I think the government, including the Ministry of Health, have gotten a lot of criticisms over the way the epidemic is handled. I believe that most of the criticisms are justified. But on the other hand, I do also understand the bind that they're in. Honestly, there isn't much room for maneuvering right now. I mean, critics say that the Ministry of Health should test more, which I agree. We definitely should test more. But again, there is that conflict of if you test more, obviously you would have to expect a lot more cases. But then the healthcare system is under such tremendous strain right now. So what are you going to do with all these new cases coming in? But on the other hand, if you don't test more, then the likelihood of cases coming in at a very late stage requiring hospitalization or critical care becomes much higher. So it's a catch-22 situation. But I do think that the government could be a lot more transparent with the data instead of trying to push the narrative that everything is under control. I mean, I understand that the government may not want to spark public panic, but I do think there is a fine balance between that and trying to hide things which would only increase public distrust. In a public health crisis, you do need cooperation and trust from the public. And that means not treating the public like children. You have to be honest with Malaysian citizens. And because this, we're all in this together. So we do have a right to know exactly what is going on.
And CodeBlue and other news outlets have been reporting on the devastating work conditions of our medical frontliners and the stretched capacity of our healthcare system. I mean, is the situation worse than we think?
I do believe the situation is worse than we think, unfortunately, Shazana. CodeBlue posted 3 videos of really appalling conditions at the Klang General Hospital, where multiple patients, for example, have to share oxygen supply. And this is at the emergency department in Hospital Tengku Ampuan Rahimah Klang. And they are in really close proximity. You see patients lying on the floor, sitting in the chairs. The conditions are filthy. And those videos were sent anonymously from a doctor to CodeBlue. And it's anonymous because of, you know, the government's gag order on civil servants. Besides the videos we've seen over the past few days, pictures of the conditions at HKL, you know, the patients being put on canvas beds outside the emergency department at Klang Hospital. I mean, those are snapshots, right, of the actual situation on the ground. I mean, CodeBlue also recently published a story titled Klang Valley Hospitals on the Brink of Collapse. And that story also described quite pertinently just how bad the situation is in Selayang Hospital, Ampang, where you see health workers saying that they have to stack bodies on trolleys to clear beds as fast as they can because that you want to make room for incoming admissions. So they're just stacking bodies right now. So it does sound terrible. And these are all unofficial accounts. The Ministry of Health has not publicly said anything or even allowed the media access into these hospitals to report the actual situation. So it's probably a lot worse than what is officially reported by the government.
Right. You mentioned a gag order. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? What does the gag order entail? How much freedom do they have to speak about their experiences to the press?
Right. So the government's gag order actually isn't anything new. It's been there for decades and it's not only applicable to Ministry of Health staff, but just across board. All civil servants generally can't say anything that is not approved by their superior. So, of course, during the COVID crisis, you know, the media, we do want to speak to as many healthcare workers as possible to get actual reports on what's happening, but they are not allowed to do that. And the Ministry of Health issued a circular a couple of months ago. So, again, telling healthcare workers not to to be more ethical on social media, so to speak. That was what their circular said. But essentially, we have a lot of doctors who talk to COBDU. They all, of course, have to only speak on the condition of anonymity, which I find quite frustrating, you know, because, you know, in other countries, in the UK, in the US, the healthcare workers are free to speak publicly about what's really going on. But here in Malaysia, they're not, and they're forced to rely on anonymous accounts. And I personally don't like publishing anonymous accounts because I feel that people have to take accountability for what they say. But in a situation, in a crisis like COVID, I understand that they cannot say things publicly because if they did, they would face disciplinary action.
Right. Have we?
But at the same time, we need the stories to come out because otherwise we wouldn't know what's really going on.
Right. Have we heard so far any stories of repercussions towards doctors who have spoken out?
I have heard one or two. I have heard reports of one or two doctors perhaps facing some disciplinary actions or being called up to explain why they said this on Facebook, but that's just unofficial accounts.
Right. And this really doesn't help. It doesn't help the whole trust in what kind of information is coming out from the government, as you said earlier. I mean, is this situation all down to the messy political situation that we're in at the moment? Is this ultimately impacting our healthcare system in the time of COVID?
I think a crisis of such magnitude like COVID, we should have not just one person, but ideally we should have a team of people managing the entire crisis. I think the Health Director General, Dr. Noor Hisham, has done a good job so far, but what is really required is to have a team of people like what the US did also with COVID. I mean, it wasn't just Fauci leading the COVID response in the US. He had a team of people. Because when you have a team of people, you are open to differing opinions and it's not just one opinion that counts. So when you have differing opinions, then you would have a more robust way of managing the public health response. So different people, different experts could come up with different proposals. And, you know, when it's teamwork, then it just helps that there are more people at the table coming up with solutions to the crisis rather than just one person unilaterally deciding everything. When it comes to the political situation, I find it amazing that Malaysian politicians can find the time to just politicize things and make all these power gains when Malaysia is facing the height of the COVID epidemic. Actually, it's not even a height. I'm not even sure if this is a height.
We don't know if this is the rock bottom.
No, it could get a lot worse. And this is a time when the entire country is not even certain of what kind of government we will have tomorrow or next week. So it really doesn't help. I mean, people say that, it's the civil servants running the ship. True, of course, civil servants do the work. But the reason why we have elected lawmakers, why we have a cabinet, is because these are the people who are accountable to Malaysian voters on how they manage the epidemic. We didn't vote in the civil servants. The policies, the strategies, at the end of the day, still come from the cabinet. It still comes from politicians. But instead of focusing their efforts on resolving the crisis, on getting as many people vaccinated as possible, they're just busy trying to pull each other down and trying to be the next prime minister, which is absolutely absurd. And what worries me, Shazana, is that if the political crisis isn't resolved soon, we may be forced to enter a general election. And can you imagine a general election at this time? If we thought Sabah was bad, I cannot imagine how much worse it would be for a general election to happen in the next few months.
Absolutely agree with you there. And I wanted to get your thoughts as well. The fact that the Klang Valley, the most developed part of the country, is facing healthcare collapse. I mean, what does that say about how we're dealing with the pandemic right now?
I think, the fact that the epicenter right now is happening in the Klang Valley shows that we just let things run out of control. Yeah, that's basically it. Right now, the only way to stop it, to cut the link between infection and hospitalization and death, is vaccines. And we are now only, I think it's only been in the past few weeks that we've really ramped up vaccinations, which is great. And I understand that the government couldn't do this earlier because of supply issues. I mean, vaccine supply is a real problem, and we did have rich countries, developed countries, hoarding vaccines and vaccinating all of their populations first. And so this is something that we have to bear in mind too, the fact that rich countries could vaccinate a huge proportion of their population before they were hit by the Delta variant. But the Delta variant has already hit us, and I think that could be one reason why the epidemic in the Klang Valley is so bad, because not enough people are vaccinated, and the Delta variant is so much more transmissible than other variants. And Australia has reported finding that the Delta variant can be transmitted in less than 15 seconds. And I think the reason why we got here is also because our SOPs haven't kept up with it, our public health measures haven't kept up with the variant. So we're using the same tools that we used last year against an enemy that is so much more advanced now. I mean, sure, we can wear masks, we can socially distance, but as we know now, COVID is airborne. COVID is airborne, the Delta variant, apparently in Australia, they find that because they're also facing Delta, so they assume that if one person in a household got infected with Delta, it's safe to assume that everyone in the household got infected. Whereas previously, they might have gotten only one or two other infections in that household. So, but yet Malaysia doesn't seem to have kept up with that. And they still repeat the same SOPs, but it's just not as effective anymore.
And I suppose how extensive variants are in the country, that's another data point that isn't, either the government's not disclosing that, or we just aren't collecting enough data on that.
Well, to be fair, Shazana, the Ministry of Health does regularly provide reports on genomic sequencing that we have done and the number of variants that we have found. So usually the Ministry of Health issues these weekly reports from CPRC to the media. And in these weekly reports to the media, it does state how much genomic sequencing has been done and the number of variants that were found. Malaysia really hasn't done a lot of genomic sequencing compared to other countries like Singapore or the UK. So the short answer is that we don't know just how widespread the Delta is here, but we just have to assume, whatever we do, we just have to assume that we're facing Delta right now.
Okay, Sulin, I want to end on a positive note of some sort. Is there any silver lining that you see in the current gloom?
Okay, the silver lining is that our vaccination program is going off on a really good start. We're constantly administering more vaccines than the previous day, and we're exceeding vaccination targets set by the government. So that's a silver lining I see. That program, the vaccination program, is chugging along really well, and our vaccination rates keep getting higher. So the focus right now should be on vaccination. That's the only exit out of this crisis. We have to vaccinate as many people as possible and as quickly as possible.
All right. And on that note, Sulin, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
No problem. Thanks, Shazana.
I've been speaking to Bu Sulin, editor-in-chief of the medical news portal Code Blue. Check out more of their coverage at codeblue.galencenter.org. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then it's over to Enterprise. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.